Mini-episode 813 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the FDH Lounge. We have a very special conversation for you today. We've been looking forward to doing this since Super Bowl week. And when subsequently our guest booker, Steve Cervillo, met this woman, a very prominent media figure down in Texas, Deborah Duncan. And she is on KHOU television down there hosting the morning show. She is the recipient of many awards throughout her career, two Emmy Awards, two Gracie Allen Awards, Telly Awards. Somebody who is very active in the community, does a lot of service to the community, a very, if I can say this without embarrassing her, beloved media figure down in the Houston area, as I am given to understand. And we have, as we discussed off air briefly, a good mutual friend in Houston native Vernon Turner, who we have been a good friend of and have championed his cause on the show since 2011. And she was witness to an awful lot of his ongoing work to publicize his upcoming movie and his other projects during Super Bowl week. But with everything that was going on down there Super Bowl week, it was definitely a good time to catch up with her and talk about everything that that she saw as it was going on. So a true pleasure to have you on the show, Deborah. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. I feel like, you know, a bride who, like, plans this wedding that goes on for years and they finally have the wedding and then all of a sudden it's over and you wake up and you go, is that all there is? It's gone. It's over. That's how we feel about the whole Super Bowl thing. We've been planning this for like since 2013, right? And I picked my dress and everything. And then all of a sudden we're like, did it really come and go that fast? But it was so cool.
Well, I hear you. As a lifelong native of Cleveland, we had a number of things last year that we didn't necessarily anticipate happening in this city. But the one thing that we knew was going to happen was the Republican National Convention. That had been on the books
yes.
for like 2+ years. And everybody geared up for it. And yeah, there is this great sense of anticipation and build towards it. And in the case of our event, it was a thing where when it was over, it was kind of a little bit of sadness and everything that we had been built up. But to be honest with you, a ton of relief, because contrary to what you guys were experiencing down there, we were looking at probably having major unrest, things coming completely
yeah.
unglued. So we were looking at a lot of worst case scenarios that you probably weren't.
Well, the one thing we did, you know, we all kind of crossed our fingers on was the concern over would somebody like sabotage, you know, and so the security was obviously heightened here more than ever before for a Super Bowl since 9/11 in, you know, in Houston. And so it was one of those things where we just, the security was actually much more palpable this time around than it was the last time that even the Super Bowl was here in Houston. So that was the thing for us. It's like you kind of held your breath and hoped that everybody had a great time and that nothing bad would happen. And of course, that's what we did.
Well, that's very interesting because you're talking about the last time it being there being 2004, that being
mm-hmm.
not too long after 9/11. You had the Iraq War that was still going on pretty strong at that point in time. So one would have thought at that moment in time, things would have been pretty jacked up, I would think almost maximum, but well, I don't know whether it would be technologies
yeah.
to continue to evolve or whatever, but you're saying that it went well
yeah,
beyond that.
I think
this
technology,
time.
Yeah, technology is one, and of course the other thing is just all the events all of a sudden, you know, because right away after 2000, when that happened with 9/11, right away we didn't really quite think about the other off-spin of, you know, events like the Super Bowl and stuff. And then, of course, what's happening in Europe lately and all that stuff, I think we were just a lot more aware.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. And obviously, it's a big magnet. It's a big target for anybody that would like to cause a bloodbath. I mean, arguably the biggest
event
that we
see. Don't mess with Texas. As we say, don't mess with Texas. Yeah, don't mess with Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, that was established pretty well. But I have to say, too, and this was a question that I put you to think about a little bit off air, because as I shared with you, I have, in the course of a lot of times, trying to ask a thought-provoking question inadvertently ambushed somebody by being a little bit too thought-provoking with it. It's funny how you told me the same thing happened with Oprah one time. So I guess that's happened to all of us, to try to go below the surface a little bit here and ask things that are not just too obvious. But I am really, really curious as to why Houston has only had three of the 51 Super Bowls, never even had one in the Astrodome, which for a long period of time, I would say was maybe the most famous stadium in the world, but it completely skipped over from Rice Stadium
to
NRG in 2004. Yeah, it's what accounts for that, do you think?
Yeah, I think there are a couple of things. One, I think, is just actually having that force that really goes out and lobbies the city. And even our own CBB will say that, you know, we really didn't start really gearing up for that until we kind of connected the dots. Houston has always been a really dynamic city, but we didn't toot our own horn very much. You know, we're the center of the world's largest medical center. Of course, NASA is here. We have the busiest port in the country is here. We're the most diverse city in the country and the fourth largest in the country. And a lot of people, when you tell them that, they go, really? They didn't really get that. And we're the foodie capitals of the country now because of all of our diversity. And I think they really just put forth a concerted effort to connect all the dots and say, look what our city has. The other thing is that we really didn't have a connected downtown or even a connected transportation system, because, you know, a lot of us were still in our cars. And so they made the effort to get light rail together. And then downtown is absolutely beautiful right now. And a lot of people have come back downtown to live and to work. We have green space down there. So they really prepared for this to happen, which I think makes our city much more attractive for so many other things to come.
See, that's very interesting, because I was going to ask you a follow-up question, and I think you may have already anticipated it with some of your answers. So I think I know what you're going to say, but I'd like to hear you elaborate anyways. And that being the sense that I've had, because as you said, to a lot of people, you know, maybe Houston was kind of a secret as far as the stuff they had going on. For somebody like me who's very interested in geography and in different places, I've always thought that it was a place that was really sort of under-spotlighted as far as its importance. Mm-hmm. And I think that became more clear to me in the last year or two when I was reading some stories talking about the Gulf Coast, and that, you know, pretty soon, you know, when we're talking about the coasts in America, it won't just be the East Coast and the West Coast. People will be talking about the Gulf Coast. The funny thing is, I live on what we call the North Coast, but nobody seems to be giving much credence to that. But as far as the Gulf Coast and Houston's role in it and everything like that, for the importance that it has with the oil industry, and for Texas being, you know, one of the things that really sort of propped up the U.S. job numbers for most of the last 8 years, is it a city that has really just been sort of taken for granted to a large degree?
Yeah, I think so. And you're right. You hit on it, the energy capital of the world. But, you know, when you say, why would you go to Orlando? We know why we go to Orlando. Why do you go to the Big Apple? We know why you go there. Why do you go to so many of these other places, L.A., and you have that big tourist attraction, even San Antonio, and people say the Alamo. I've been in Europe, and they go, where are you from? You go, Texas, and they go, oh, the Alamo. Well, not exactly. I'm kind of in another city. But I think when you ask people in Houston, why would you go to Houston? Like, why would somebody pick that as a vacation spot or whatever? But for the most part, when you say, why would you go to Houston? A lot of people will say to live. And so it's so much about the people. And so when you go someplace to live and there's quality of life, I think the hard part is you can't nail, like, you would go for this particular theme park, which we used to have one. We got rid of it. Houston, one of our downfalls is we do kind of get rid of things. But I think it's just, it's really that. You would come here. And, you know, we're 45 minutes away from the ocean, which is in Galveston, right? So we do have some things, but we just really have not really connected all of that together. But we're a more sophisticated city now than ever before. And I think you come here to kind of just sink into the city. We have a good music scene, but usually people think of music, they think of Austin with South by Southwest and things. But it really is all here. We just haven't connected all those dots. And our commission visitors bureau, visithouston.com, by the way, they've done a great job of really trying to pull all of that in. And the world is here. That's the coolest thing, too. I walked through the mall the other day, and I had about 13, 14 people stop me. They were all from other countries. And they said, we love watching your show. You know, great day, Houston, because we learn about the city quickly, but we also learn to speak English, some of them will say. So it's been pretty cool. The medical industry, of course, has brought a lot of people from around the world, as well as the oil industry.
Interesting, because that was something I didn't know about it, as far as it being that much of an international gateway. But obviously, I mean, anybody that looks at population numbers knows that, again, it is a very important city in that sense, and has been for quite some time.
Well, a lot of times we think about Ellis Island. Mm-hmm. Lots of things think about Ellis Island in terms of bringing, but Ellis Island was mostly a port for people coming in from Europe. The rest of the world actually came through Galveston in the 1800s.
Very interesting. That is something that I actually, I'm ashamed to admit that I did not know. So that
well,
is
I have more for you.
Well, here's what I'm wondering is, and again, I think I know the answer to this, but I want to, based on my own experiences, but I'd like to hear you elaborate about it. Now, when I go back to talking about the Republican National Convention from last year, and you can tie into that as well when the national media has been here the last couple of years for the NBA Finals, the World Series, et cetera, there's been a sense you talked about Houston pumping up their downtown. Cleveland's done the same thing. And I have to tell you, that's a thing where, now, again, our city has been really beaten down more so than a lot of other places in the national image. Houston might have been ignored, overlooked, whatever. Cleveland has been actively ridiculed for the course of the last couple of decades. So there's a real sort of chest puffing out. And the way that the national news media in particular, they were here for the convention last year, and everybody just came away like, whoa, look at Cleveland, they've rebuilt it. Whoa, you know, it was like, that kind of, you know, swelling the pride in the chests of Houston residents these days after the Super Bowl and after people get a chance to see that and get a new appreciation?
Yeah, there is. And the key thing is, you know, we do a lot of things on our show to tell Houstonians about their own backyard, right? And so it's funny because, so many things happen at the same time, but kind of quietly. And when you drive out around town, you start to go, oh, when did they put that up? Where'd that come from? And it's been really, really cool to see. There is that, you know, because before Texas, as Texas goes, so goes the nation in so many ways, and Texas has its own mystique, having been its own country and all that stuff, but they always thought there was basically two cities in Texas, and it was Dallas and San Antonio, and then Austin started to emerge as this kind of funky, cool city, and of course, the seat of our capital, but yeah, finally, Houston has arrived, but I think our nature here is not to be braggadocious. We just kind of just things are what they are. But when people are driving around, I arrived here in Houston. You know, we'd had our oil hit at one point. Oil came back, but downtown was not a place you went to. You wanted to get either stay right inside the loop or get out of the loop and go to all the suburbs that were being built. The homes were new, the schools were cool, there were master planned communities. But now people have come back to the center. And downtown is a place you would go to for nightlife as well. Go down there to work, but you also had a nightlife there. You have people living down there right now. So I think as a downtown does for any city, when it's invigorated, the rest of the community is invigorated around it. And you claim that as your central, you know, spot and the thing that identifies your city. You look at skylines and people can look across skylines and say, oh, that's, you know, whatever. And I think now, more so than ever, even Houstonians are able to look at a skyline and go, and that's us.
That makes a lot of sense. And I was really very impressed with the area. The only time I've ever been down there in 2012, going down there and staying with my aforementioned friend Vernon Turner for a few days before and after driving up to South by Southwest. And where he's at there, again, all of Houston, greater Houston, seems like a very nice area. Pearland, where he's at, that kind of struck me. Every area's got their creme de la creme, and it struck me that Pearland was probably that for you guys.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, it was a great area overall, and yeah, I was very impressed with it as somebody that was there. And again, so the national media comes in, and you've got Super Bowl week, and you've got Radio Row, which again, I know that Vernon was busy navigating all week for everybody who was following him on social media.
Oh yeah,
he's
going back and forth between TV and radio and the whole bit. He just saw.
He had a lot of stuff going on. Absolutely, but you know, on the local level, and I saw some of the programming, and specifically the segment when Vernon and one of his former teammates was on your show. So what's the experience like when you're in the local media of being there at that sort of epicenter of sports media for a week?
It was fun for us to see all the celebrities walking through, right? And so we became, what our local folks do to us, we're like, going, there's so-and-so. Oh, my gosh, get a picture, right? And but it was really cool. I think what also happened is that having this event here, everyone was just – nicer to each other. It was like we were all experiencing something together. So who I took a lot of my pictures with were the security guards that were outside, the custodians who were sweeping up. They were just like, Miss Duncan, can we please get a picture? This is so exciting. I did the part of the training seminar for the 10,000 volunteers. And when we saw those 10,000 volunteers who were, you know, signing up for whatever job they could do around Super Bowl, They were so cool. You saw a surgeon standing next to an unemployed person, standing next to somebody who sells popcorn at the stadium. So everybody was just in it together. And it just was such a rise in like kind of, you know, city pride and the whole bit, because everyone was doing the whole thing together. And people stopped what they were doing, their other jobs, to break down and then go out and do whatever the Super Bowl committee needed them to do. It was really fun. And for me, it was, I met like a whole lot of new friends is how I kind of see it. No matter where I turn. At one point, it was funny. I had a couple of pro football players who were like, Deborah. I was like, hi, you look nice. And they're like, I play for such and such team and I know you from. It's like, oh, wow, that's cool. So it was really fun. But it just was one of those moments where everybody was kind of walking the same path. And we knew something good was happening here, and we all got to celebrate it at the same time, and it was at every level. Whether you ever went to the game or not, whether you ever saw a celebrity or player, we were all still having a great time with this whole event.
Those moments of time are very special. Yes, I can definitely attest to that, that when you've got something that huge going on in your town, and this is the sort of spirit that grips everybody. Now, what was your game day experience like? Were you watching at the stadium, or were you at an event elsewhere?
No, okay, my son was actually born on Super Bowl Sunday when the Super Bowl
really?
Was last in Houston. Yeah, so it was funny because I got up to go cover because we had been covering it, of course, all week. I was a news anchor at the time, so I was covering news, and we would anchor down at the NFL experience and the whole bit. And then I woke up that Sunday morning, and I went, I don't feel good. So I had to go to my hospital, which was right across the street basically from NRG Stadium. So can you imagine going, pregnant lady, please? And they're like, they didn't care. That was the year, of course, that my son was 9'5" and he was born. And that was the year that Janet Jackson had her little mishap with her top. And I thought she was just trying to help me feed my baby, but apparently that's not what she was doing. But anyway, so that was funny. So every year after that, we would have my son's birthday party on Super Bowl Sunday. So he really thought everyone was in town because they were celebrating his birthday. But so every year we do that. So that's how we watch the game, was we have a big cookout at our house and all of his friends come over. And, of course, when you have a grown-up cookout where the food is, like, really good, then when they RSVP, they don't just drop their kid off and keep going. The parents come too. So we had a house full of people watching the game.
Well, yeah, you beat me to it. I was about to make some kind of joke along the lines of that you were apparently the one person in America who was too busy to be scandalized by Janet Jackson at the time there. But that is a very unique slice of life to have actually given birth to your son in the Super Bowl city on Super Bowl Sunday.
That's
something that. Yeah. I mean, that's a story that few people can match, to be sure.
Right, trying to get through traffic. That's all I wanted to do. I'm like, I don't care about the game. I just want to get to the hospital, please.
Oh, yeah. And that was – now, were you running into any kind of issues as far as – because a lot of times for security reasons or whatever, the streets blocked off or whatever, was your journey to the hospital made worse in any way by the fact that it was Super Bowl Sunday?
No.
Or
you
just
know
the usual amount of chaos?
Yeah, it was usual chaos. But the interesting thing is that, again, it was different last time. There were so many things that we could go to and get in without the security that we had this time around. Like we did our show down there live at the NFL Experience. We would leave, you know, 3 hours before our broadcast time because we had to go through several checkpoints and, you know, it would change every day. And so, it was completely different. Before, we just walk on down and walk on in, but, you know, not this time around. A lot tighter.
Really interesting, yeah, because you wouldn't think post 9/11 that it would be that sort of slow to get to the whole security state that it is today. It's interesting to realize how much that's really sort of continuously evolved over the last 17 years rather than just sort of sprung up right there. Because, again, if you think back, too, and this is before, I'm sure, either of our times, but one can only imagine what a waltz it was getting in and out of stuff for the Super Bowl in 1974. Not that they had their version of Radio Row or anything even remotely like today, but, you know, back then you probably just went wherever you wanted, whenever you wanted, huh?
You're right. You probably went in with the players. Excuse me. You know, I mean, can I get your autograph? It's funny. I used to work in Dallas, and of course, I went to, you know, a couple of Super Bowls with the Dallas Cowboys. And Roger Staubach was talking, and he was joking, but he goes, you know, yeah, back in my day, you were a quarterback for the season, and then you went and worked a job selling shoes to fill in the gaps, right? Because today they're getting $50 million, and it's a little bit different. But and then that they would just, you know, walk up to people and say hello and the whole bit. And now, of course, it's just very, very tight on the security with a lot of the players. Like I tried to get with Tom Brady, but he wasn't interested. So Joking.
He was a little busy.
We're yelling from afar. Yeah, we're yelling from afar. Yeah. Tom, look this way. Look this way, Tom, please. I just want to see your face.
Well, and you've anticipated another question of mine, which is basically the way that the game turned out. Now, again, it was an exciting Super Bowl the last time it was in Houston. First time it was there, not so much. The Dolphins pretty much just steamrolled the Vikings. Last time, it was a fairly exciting Super Bowl. It did come down to the wire, but that's not one of the ones that we really remember as one of the all-time
but
greats
remember,
for whatever
the
reason.
The last Super Bowl, yes, it came down to the wire, but everybody was thrown by the whole Janet Jackson thing. So it was like we had all kinds of events happening at the Super Bowl. So, but yeah, this time it was a great game. But I think people look at it and they go, okay, it's just entertainment. Why do we go through all of this? But sports teaches people so many lessons. You know, anybody who plays a game can tell you. Look at the race relations that we have today. But if you're playing a game and you have a common goal, you don't care what someone's religion is. You don't care what their race is. You have a goal to get done. And what we loved about this one, of course, is no matter, I really didn't have a dog in the hunt. I didn't care which team really won, but I love that whole thing of when you're down, you're not out. And so when they came back and did it. So there are so many different lessons that you can extract from sports and from a single game. And I think that's like the overall reason why we gravitate so much to it. I love seeing grown men in the crowd screaming at the referees and going crazy about the grown men and women, for that matter, going crazy. It's like, do you know any of these people? And they're like, no, I just, you know, you don't know anybody down there, but you're acting like that's your child on the field. But it's cool because people get invested in something and they get invested collectively in something. And we all learn stuff from it. So I love
it. Well,
as a
guy who was making multiple sobbing phone calls after the Cavs won the championship last June, I think I can kind of understand what you're talking about there. So, you know, that's what this kind of brings out in all of us. And what's interesting, of course, is that the Super Bowl, and the few times that it hasn't played out that way, it's been a fluke. I know that I think the Rams played a Super Bowl in the Rose Bowl, and the 49ers played one at Stanford one time, but by and large, it's inherently a neutral site game. So it's a thing where it's in a city that's divorced from the two teams. Once in a while, maybe it'll be a city that hates one of the two teams, which makes it interesting, but usually it's just
well,
a neutral kind
I'll
of
what
deal.
Happened here. Of course, I was talking to one of the folks who's with the Houston Texans, and she's like, look, I know it's like we should support our Texas team, but when they lost, we said at least there won't be a star flying over our stadium, you know, because there's a rivalry, of course, between Houston and Dallas. But would that not have been the coolest thing ever, a Super Bowl game between Dallas and Houston in Houston and Houston wins?
Yeah, that would have been the ultimate, certainly. But I'm wondering what the kind of, you know, sense was after the game down there in terms of, again, the last time it was an exciting Super Bowl, came down to the wire. Maybe not one of the ones that's going to be remembered until the end of time. This one seems like it's going to be shattered the record for biggest comeback, so memorable in so many ways. Is there an extra sense of, I mean, it would be overdoing it, I suppose, to say civic pride that it was a sort of historical event, but like any extra kind of sense of oomph for all the locals down there of like, this is a game they're going to be talking about till the end of time, and it happened here.
And I'm not quite sure they were so hooked on the game, but I think what I heard a lot more people say, and this people in city government, people in business, was we showed that we can do this, so keep them coming. Keep things coming this way, right? And so we have other playoff games that we have, Final Four and stuff like that. They're like, you know, keep them coming because we showed that we could pull it off. So, I don't know so much that it was invested in the game itself because it wasn't one of our Texas teams, right? But it was an event that everybody saw and that we were able to pull off in this city. And I think that we're finally emerging where you can – I did it several years ago. Probably about 2 or 3 years ago. I went around and asked people who has the largest medical center in the world, and people didn't know. Who has one of the best, you know, museum and theater districts? And people oftentimes say New York or L.A., right? Well, it's like Houston does too. And they're like, really? Yeah, all this stuff is right here in your backyard. So I think what it did is it showcased that not only are we a dynamic city, but we can follow the marching orders and carry out events like this as well.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, though. I can kind of relate to what you're saying there, and I realize that, again, it's been 20-plus years since the Rockets won their championships there, but what you're saying sort of puts me in mind of during that long sports oasis, or desert, rather, I should say, of all those years in Cleveland, We used to talk about the Cleveland Clinic, the Cleveland Orchestra, whatever. I think it's going to be a lot easier shining a spotlight on all the other stuff you got going on there, Deborah, when one of these teams gets it done again, because everybody seems to pay a lot more attention when that's happening for whatever reason.
Absolutely. Sports is, that's it. That's the reason why we sleep it, drink it, eat it, right? Sports is it. And
that's
you're
right.
Absolutely right. And it's so hard. You know, we had, you know, New Orleans and they finally won their Super Bowl and they're like, we waited, was it like 30 something years? And we keep thinking, mm-hmm. okay, keep hope alive. Right. And
yeah.
you're right. And it's funny because the celebrities today, although we have like JJ Watt, you know, and stuff, but for the most part, people still respond to when Hakeem Olajuwon comes to town. You know, Clyde Drexler. It's like the last time we had that championship with one of the major sports is those are the people that we still hold on to. And we even, you know, have lots of folks that we love who are Love Your Blue Days, you know, with Earl Campbell and Pastorini. People still have, you know, an emotional connection to them as well. And I think until we have that team that wins a Super Bowl or gets to the Super Bowl, you know, that we kind of hold on to that nostalgia.
That's the way it goes. That's absolutely the way it goes. Even somebody as polarizing as Jim Brown, that's how he retains popularity in this town, even after things like allegedly the woman flying off the balcony the one time and whatever. Hey, he won the 1964 championship, all these other things. So, yeah, I can believe that. That's
sort of
the
blind
spot we get with our athletes.
Yeah, sports is very forgiving. That's why I keep telling my son, you need to run fast, dunk well, or something, right? But it's going to be Carl Lewis is here, and of course we love him too. He just went back to the University of Houston and is coaching track for free. He said that university gave him so much, and so this is his way of giving back.
Well, so much of what he had was God-given, but, I mean, if anything involving technique could sort of be imparted to other people, certainly he would be somebody who could do that. So, yeah, I would think anybody would be fortunate to be coached by him in track. That must be an experience to cherish for anybody that's going through it. But, yeah, it's definitely, you know, indicative of things down there in a very interesting marketplace in your town, no question about it. And as we alluded to earlier, Super Bowl week being a thing, good mutual friend of ours, Vernon Turner, a resident of Houston for a good long period of time now. I know that he was really sort of pointing towards this, and I know that as far as some of the behind-the-scenes maneuverings went, as far as getting everything going, he was really pointing to this for Super Bowl week in terms of getting ducks in a row and really had things not gone as they had as far as getting some of the screenwriting stuff coming into play and some of the other mm-hmm. business things that he wouldn't have really had as much to promote. So he hustled and he hustled for several months. And I was so happy to see that Super Bowl week, it was all able to play out. He was able to get the message out there about the movie that's coming, the charitable type stuff that he's doing. Of course, your show featured when he was playing the flag football game for the Wounded Warriors. So talk mm-hmm. about your observations. Again, you interviewed him on the air that week, but of being around everything that he had going on Super Bowl week.
You know, even before then, we had interviewed him the first time, you know, a few months ago, and we found him through, I think it was Steve, who's his business partner. But we do a segment called Beyond the Jersey. You know, there's so much that we focus mm-hmm. on in terms of how much money they make and who they're married to and all this type of stuff. And really, this is what I think gives so much more weight to a game, a sport, right? And Vernon's story was just – it was just so amazing. I was in awe of that man. And it wasn't because of what happened to him. It is how he handled it. You mentioned earlier, I do a lot of volunteer work and a lot of fundraising for things. And, you know, one of my areas is in recovery, where, you know, people get off track and drugs becomes, you know, their escape. And I'm looking at Vernon going, everyone would forgive you if you had gone the complete opposite way. We get it, right? But he didn't.
Sure.
And his sense of responsibility, his sense of value for other people, his sense, I love that man. I send him text like every other day and go, I just want you to know you're loved, right? He's just such a cool guy with such grace. And I think it gives the sport, you know, we hear about the bad boys all the time. We need to hear more about these guys too. And he's just a beautiful soul. And I loved it when he was on the show the day before the show. I knew we had Cece Winans, who's, you know, the 10-time Grammy Award winning gospel singer on the show. And I thought, you know what? I bet he listened to her music. And so I texted him do you like CeCe Winans? And, oh my gosh, I got all of her stuff. And yes. And so I had him tell her that day on the show what her music meant to him. He's like, it got me through a lot of stuff. Right. And then Chidi, of course, having his old friend there who he hadn't seen. And he said, I think probably 10, 15 years. And he came on in for him as well. So we had those two together to share their experiences of playing in the Super Bowl. But no, Vernon is, I can't wait for that movie to come out. It's got such beautiful lessons in it. And I think it is so timely right now because there are a lot of families behind closed doors dealing with this issue, and children are forced to grow up so quickly. And unfortunately, a lot of those kids walk the same path as their parents did. And he's an example of, being able to go the other way. Pardon?
Oh, yeah. And being the first project that the Players Tribune, Derek Jeter's group, is going to be putting out, of course, again, it is going to take on the flavor of being a sports movie. But as you know from knowing the story, and I think as for anybody that's heard our multiple conversations with Vernon on this show, again, a lot more of a life movie than it is a sports movie. It's got sports flavoring, of course, and football was instrumental in helping to pull him out of his circumstances. But the real story, as you so correctly indicated, there's him, everything he went through, his drive and his determination to get past these circumstances. And, yeah, I know he did a lot of reconnecting when he was down there. You talk about his old friend Chidi that he hadn't seen in a long time. I think he said on your show probably about 20 years since he'd seen him. And
wow.
I know that there were some other folks, too. The legendary Bills receiver Andre Reed, I don't think he had seen him since, like, the 90s. When he was still playing, so there was that. And it's always very interesting, too, the whole web that he has as far as people he's played with and done stuff with. He's also played with people who are famous for anything other than their football career. I think he was on the 92 Rams, I believe, with both wrestling legend Goldberg and the great actor Terry Crews. So he's been around a lot of colorful people in his life.
Yeah, but then again, and there it is. Like, what is – you know, my husband, my son's more of a, he's going to be a track kid, right? He's going to run. But my husband was like, you know, he wants him to play team sports so badly because he goes, there's just so much you get out of it. I was in team sports. I was also in bands, right? And so you always say to people, come on, let's get on the same page, people. It's like, in cases like this, it's not the same page. It's down to the exact second, right, of doing something.
Mm-hmm.
But that it was so fun to watch. Like when Vernon saw Chidi and they both walked up, he's like, oh my, you know, it's like long lost family. And then to see other guys recount the stories of experiences that they had together in that one moment of crunch time, where, again, like I said earlier, you know, you're from so many different backgrounds. Everybody had a whole different path. And then you come together for that common goal. But we say team, but we always forget the team is made up of individual and individual stories. And it's not always the glamorous stories. And so that's what was so cool about being down there and hearing all these different tales, if you will, like the fishing stories, right? We caught one this big.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they all had their stories, and they're the moments that you didn't see on air or broadcast. You know, it's stuff that happened on the bus or on the plane or in the locker room. So it was really cool. It's definitely a very interesting fraternity, you know, of sorts, and it's a whole family in itself.
It really is. And I know, for example, that the CBS Sports sideline announcer Steve Tasker, of course, he will always be best known to football fans as maybe the greatest pure special teams player ever, a guy who was just a warrior on those Bills teams back in the day. And I got a big laugh out of this. You know, you talk about stories. I got a story from Vernon one time about he approached Steve. He went up to him at one of the media things that he was at, not Super Bowl week. This was like a couple of years ago when his book had first come out. He came up to him, gave him a copy of the book. He opened it to the page there. Of course, they were teammates with the Bills, but the next year I believe that he was with the Rams. There is a picture in there. It's one of the greatest football pictures I've ever seen. Steve Tasker lighting him up. Vernon's feet must have been like 3 feet in the air from the tackle.
Oh, wow.
From Tasker, and he said Tasker was just laughing uncontrollably looking at that picture. So those are the kind of things, yeah, you know, you talk about, you know, stories that are like larger than life. Anybody gets a copy of Vernon's book, and I understand that there is going to be another printing of it coming out here, that's the kind of stuff you got to look forward to, and those are the stories that just make you smile when you hear them.
Yeah, because you don't see them everywhere, and I love it. When I was working in Dallas, you know, Jimmy Johnson was there. And you mentioned special teams, and I was doing a football 101 type class. And I go, no, what is special teams? Because you would be special teams. And I go, well, what does that mean? He goes, because you're just on the other side of crazy. That's what you would be. Yeah, you got to have a little extra something in you. So it's funny. But, yeah, there's all of the different stories that are told, but that, again, like we said, that never hit the air. And I think it was really cool what Derek Jeter has done. You know, and I was haunted by that letter that Vernon had written, you know, to his 15-year-old self. And we had to ask him if he wanted to read a part of it on the show, and he said, I can't. So I read that part when he wished his mom would die because he's so frustrated with her for not letting him go to his football practice, which was, as a kid, his only escape, right? That was a sense of a normal family for him, with being with the team. And then, you know, he says that line of, don't do it, Vernon, because within 72 hours, she'll be dead. And that moment right there is, like, I can't imagine. When he goes, this movie's release, it's going to be a whole nother level for him, because, you know, he had to go through baby steps. First of all, telling the story, right? And then writing it down, it's got a certain amount of therapy to it. I think a certain amount of anxiety too, right? Getting it out there. And then actually seeing it play to life and on screen, and not being able to pull back what's going to happen next, and you know what's going to happen next, you know? So it's very brave of him to step out and move forward with this, because and I hope it has a whole level of cleansing for him, that at some point he can receive that forgiveness and know that his mom loved him in the best way that she could.
That's a great point, because yeah, it is very raw for him, and you know, it will be for at least some point far into the future, if not forever, because of the elements involved in it. And yeah, it's one of those things where he's going to have to face that again when it comes out. And that's something that he's spoken about with me, and that's going to be difficult. But what's really interesting as well, and you talk about stuff kind of under the surface, is it's really, really interesting that with almost no exceptions, really none of his teammates from back in the day knew what he went through to get there. Mm-hmm. This is a thing where, I mean, when he opened up, when I think the book first came out, I believe in 2011, self-published at the time, that was really the first that anybody was hearing of this. So guys went through an entire career playing with him and never knew about it at the time. So that's one of the fascinating things, Deborah, is that they've come to see him, a lot of these old teammates, in a new light, because it's always been like, oh, I had no idea what you were going through.
And he was sending, you know, half his paycheck home, you know, to take. He took care of family first, and something tells me the leftover is what he took. And you know, how sometimes people will wear that as a badge of honor, right? And I think he just kind of put the blinders on and focused on what he had to do. And that's why he didn't really tell anybody about it. He's like, and he's such a giving and empathetic and sympathetic person. You know, I think in his mind, it's like, people have their own issues to deal with. They shouldn't have to deal with me. And finally, I think he got to the point where he knew that telling this story would help so many other people.
Yes, and it really has. And I know that he's been very heartened by that. And I know that he's been very glad, and that he clearly feels that he made the right decision in coming forward with it, and that it is going to certainly in the medium to long term, as more people find out about it and this really becomes a big thing, that it is going to help a lot of people, hopefully help save some lives. And again, must have been very cool to see that playing out Super Bowl week, along with everything else that you had going on there Super Bowl week. And just to kind of tie everything up, Deborah, it's really interesting is when you get into stuff like talking about Vernon and some of the things that were happening Super Bowl week, and what you were saying also about just the interactions with people and the people that were the volunteers and everything like that. Again, for something that on the surface is just a sports story, having the Super Bowl down there, that really is sort of the epitome of a human story, which is what you cover on your show every morning.
It is. It was teamwork, you know, between thousands of people, right? And that teamwork started early on when you had a team from Houston pitch the whole point of having a Super Bowl here again, right? And then carrying out what you were supposed to do, because obviously there was a list from the NFL. Okay, you need to make this happen if you want the Super Bowl. And so they got all that work done too. It was kind of under the radar. And then really, it was like I go downtown, but all of a sudden we went down there. We went, whoa, where did all this come from? It was a beautiful job. Back to Vernon for a second. I did tell him that, like, once he starts hitting the red carpet and, like, winning Oscar awards and stuff, don't act like you don't know me, because I will come and snatch you off that red carpet. I will. Like, don't you act like you don't know. Don't act like you don't know me, Vernon. He's like, okay, I promise. I'll come.
You know what? Fortunately for you, fortunately for me, fortunately for a lot of us, he's a loyal person, and he ain't gonna forget about us. And that is, a lesser person might, but I can tell you, that ain't gonna be Vernon.
Okay, good. He'll get out his long list and say, "I'd like to thank." And when the music starts playing, he'll get to our names, right?
as long as it's on that scroll somewhere there. I don't care how long he's got to unfurl that scroll. We'll be on it there somewhere, and that's good enough for me.
That's right. If he doesn't get to us, he'll say, "We were on there. We know we were on there." Yeah, they just had to go.
Absolutely.
Yeah, oh, my gosh.
Well, as I knew it would be, Deborah, a real delight having you on, talking to you. And obviously, as we covered, there's always so much going on in the world of Houston. So please don't be a stranger. Love to have you back on, catch up with you subsequently, talk about some other things here. Thank you so much for making time for us today.
Anytime, and thank you very much.
Really appreciate it. Great conversation, Deborah. I'm very grateful for it, as are, I know, the listeners. Thank you for being here with us today, Deborah, and thank you all for listening to this mini episode of the FDH Lounge.
Oh, hey, one thing I left out. We're also the home of the world's largest rodeo, which starts next week.
Wonderful, thank you.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.